You're listening to The Printcast, a podcast about the expanding world of printmaking today. I'm your host, Nick Naughton. The Printcast brings you interviews with some of the best contemporary printmakers, sharing anecdotes, business ideas, and technical tips with listeners everywhere. Today on the podcast, it's the second edition of a limited series I'm calling Press On, something I launched as a response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Each of these bonus episodes brings you stories from the print world and looks at how this situation is impacting the lives of people, what's happening in print shops and businesses, and how everyone is adapting to the new challenges we have to work with. Today's edition was recorded Tuesday, March 31st, almost 2 weeks into our stay-at-home shutdown here in Los Angeles. I'm not going to go into the details about the COVID-19 crisis. There are a lot of good resources already for that, but I do recommend that you tune into New York Governor Cuomo's daily briefings to learn about the up-to-date information regarding the virus. He's been a tremendous leader throughout all of this, and I really trust what he shares each day. For my part, I'm starting us off today with some recommendations on artistic or print-related ways that you can spend some time while we wait out this virus. So I'm going to just go through briefly and list a bunch of things. For links, check out the show description on iTunes or wherever you're listening right now, or on my website at theprintcast.com. First off, Hyperallergic has been doing some great programs, including a daily report on how COVID-19 is impacting the art world. It's a really good source for national up-to-date reporting. Hyperallergic also has a really good print-related write-up about a Sudanese printmaker. The title of the article is "A Sudanese Printmaker Radiates Light from Darkness." It was a really good read about a great artist that I haven't heard of before. You can read about this exhibit or check out their coronavirus daily report at hyperallergic.com. Good news is coming out of Germany. The German government passed a relief package for specifically artists and art organizations, and it totaled 500 million euros, so it's a lot of support. And only 4 days later, this is about 7 days ago now, the online grant portal was open and already taking applications. So go Deutschland for quickly coming up with an easy, quick way for your citizens to get the support they need. I would love to see a similar financial support package for artists and creatives in our country, not to mention support for many other kinds of essential workers who are working right now with a need for more support. Online gallery viewing is expanding everywhere, and I wanted to highlight two that I've recently heard about. One is Mixografia, a Los Angeles publishing shop. They're opening their latest exhibition online for you to explore called Wrong is Right, Remembering John Baldessari. And it has a 360-degree gallery view. It's kind of like playing a video game that's also an art show, and you can walk right up to all of the artworks. And also, you can walk up to the giant lithostone that's in the entryway of their building that features a really cool image by the artist Rufino Tamayo. It's a really amazing stone to see in person if you ever get to go to Mixografia in person. You can check it out online at mixografia.com and check out the exhibit and walk through and take a look at some art. IPCNY has been weekly putting out a whole slate of offerings, including their first 3D gallery tour done with Hyperallergic. It's interactive and you can get really up close to everything. Also, images have detailed information about the work, which is nice. You can also do a printmaker crossword challenge that looks really sick, that has like all kinds of terminology and things that we would all know. And there's other COVID-19 resources for artists as well. If you happen to be using this shutdown time to make lots of new artwork, they have an open call for their new prints group exhibition, and it's open to apply until April 22nd. It's a good place to show in New York, and a very print-loving audience will see your work. And the application is free. Check out everything with them at ipcny.org. Really quick, here's some other things in the news. The National Emergency Library is open with 14,000 ebooks you can check out for free. It's basically like something like the library, what the library offers, but there's no longer waiting lines or anything. You can access their entire collection for free right now, so I would actively start reading if you haven't. The Google Arts and Culture online site has 6 museums you can tour virtually. They also have an online exhibition called Faces of Frida, which you can tour, which includes artwork and articles from the life of the artist Frida Kahlo. Both of these resources are free to use. Artists Grayson Perry and Anthony Gormley, which are artists in the UK, have launched an online artist activity pack called Art is Where the Home Is. Grayson Perry is also launching a show on BBC4 that will help viewers make art while confined. Tom Huck, the St. Louis woodcut printmaker, is running more online content these days. On his Patreon, it looks like he's offering expanded programs, including lots of monthly offerings, and I've heard that he's offering a woodcut class online too right now. If you're into banjo, because I know I am, comedian Steve Martin has started doing online sessions. Yes and yes. A new release from Tame Impala called Slow Rush in an Imaginary Place aims to give you a chill place to explore now that you've got more time on your hands. It's a remix of their hit album Slow Rush that requires headphones to get the full effect. The album is an immersive 57 minutes and can be found on YouTube. And finally, a great article in Vulture this week by Jerry Saltz considers the state of the art world after this crisis passes, and it's called Last Days of the Art World, and perhaps the first days of a new one. Life after the coronavirus will be very different. I am a fan of Jerry Saltz and his writing, and he's very down-to-earth and thoughtful. Plus, I always enjoy his episodes on Chef David Chang's podcast as well. They're a great listen if you haven't heard them yet. He just really talks about art in a way that I think anybody can understand, and I really like that because he's an ambassador for more and more people to understand, you know, what good art is really about and what it takes for an artist to make the work that they do. That's it for today. Let's get on with today's edition of Press On. Thanks, everyone, for all the great activities and news out there. If you have any news worth sharing, hit me up at info@theprintcast.com. On with the show.
The Printcast Season 2, desperately searching for sponsors.
Press On today invites Joseph Velasquez onto the show, co-founder of Drive-By Press. Joseph recently worked with a contingent of artists on the campaign Let's Bring a Press to Puerto Rico, a community effort that donated a brand new tackage press to an institution in San Juan, Puerto Rico as part of the SGCI conference. With the conference formerly scheduled to start, you know, right about now, I invited Joseph to give us an update about the press, what he's involved in during his shutdown time, and the, you know, the things he's up to, like developing curriculum and doing art projects for fun. So I especially enjoy hearing about his development of the skateboard press, which you may have seen in recent months on social media. So let's take a listen and catch up with Joseph Velasquez of Drive-By Press.
Hi, I'm Joseph Velasquez. I'm an assistant professor of printmaking at Florida Atlantic University in sunny Boca Raton, Florida. I am a co-founder of Drive-By Press, and I'm a printmaker, man, and I love it.
Heck yeah, man. Well, yeah, I've been seeing you've been making some lino cuts to get you through. Like, I saw, like, a Spock
yeah.
Like t-shirt you were busting out recently.
Yeah, man, I've been, like just blazing through all the Star Treks. I've been drawing all the characters. It's like a really positive and hopeful type of a show about humanity, and I guess that's what I'm needing right now with what's going on.
Oh, I know. God, I know. I just opened the news today, and I, like, read something, and my girlfriend and I had already established we wouldn't talk about what's happening, and then, you know, like, a minute later, I read something, and I'm just like, oh, man. Oh, wow. You know, and it just brought me down, and yeah, that's what I'm trying to do, these calls, just to, like, see if, like, is there a shining kind of aspect of this or something that keeps us going that's positive coming out of all this, you know?
Yeah, I think that this is it's such a gigantic thing that it's shaking the pillars of a lot of our understandings and things that we recognize within our own perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from everything about the worth, the validity, the significance of all jobs within our social structure and the importance of them.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and it brings a lot more light to attention about, you know, our needs. And even it gives people some time for self-perspective and a pause, because you can't do anything and
yeah.
You're locked down. And so, you know, I'm having to, as a member, as a professor, I'm a member of all these different Facebook groups about, you know, teaching and how to make it go virtual. And
mm-hmm.
There's so many people that have some brilliant, brilliant ideas, but there's a lot of others that are just kind of I think just creating something in a short amount of time, and it ends up putting a lot of pressure on the students and the professors themselves to create this wild ass content that, you know, like, hey, hold on, let's be mindful of the magnitude of it. And but what I do like about it is like the printmaking alternatives that, like, you know, because it's one thing that I had struggled with the same thing. So I created at home press packs. I made like 10 skateboard presses and I signed them out to students. I showed them how to make ball bearing burnishers that they can get and make a press for $10 at Harbor Freight. Showing them just different methods to keep them printing at home so they could, if they wanted. The other ones I gave choice to write a reflection paper and go with the midterm grade that they had and, you know, write a response to certain printmaking podcasts that exist on the internet.
Yeah.
And many of them, you know, they went with that. I mean, it's such a trying time for some of the students. You know, I had some email me saying, Professor, I just got laid off my job. My grandmother's sick in Georgia and I don't know how I'm going to pay my rent. And I really don't feel like drawing on a piece of wood right now. And I'm like, of course, like I wouldn't either. Like, let's take a pause and, you know, reflect on this and be a little bit mindful about the needs of everyone.
Yeah, I think you're totally right on. Like, I mean, like what we talk about here in our apartment as we sit around each day, you know, we're trying to keep active and do things, but there's something to it that we're all having to sit with our own feelings and our emotions and all the baggage that we carry through our everyday that maybe we overlook or gloss over or ignore. And it's like, there's no ignoring any of it anymore. You know, if you're unhappy in your daily life, you're going to feel it all the time now. And it's like, it's time to deal with it and think about it and confront it. And it's the same thing with like society at large. Like you're saying, like the gig economy people who've been kind of getting like the shaft for like so long now, you know, they're some of the most vital people we have working today and bringing us all of our food and all these things. And there's no protections. And like then they pass like a stimulus bill and they basically ignore those people. And it's like, wouldn't it be cool if they instead focused on like the number one people, like healthcare, gig economy, delivery people, food service? You know, these people who have so little job security, none of them have health benefits, you know.
Mm-mm.
And I hope out of all of this, like some awakening happens. Like, I don't know how long it might have to go on for that awakening to happen. But, you know,
well, I think a lot of it is going to resonate with this next election and the people's power of their vote.
Yeah.
And for the people that, you know, that think that it doesn't matter, this is something that people who feel that policy doesn't affect them at, you know, at all levels of our society. And this really shows it does. It does.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah.
And so I'm hoping that that will be the wave. Positive things, man.
Totally. The
positive side of things, a focus on it. As we know, with Puerto Rico being canceled this week, SGCI is going to be having these positive announcements coming on starting tomorrow, I believe. And it's going to just get into like many of our campaign efforts and where they stand. One that I can preview about is the press that we were able to crowdsource and raise funds for is going to be delivered in the next 2 weeks.
Ah, that's so great. That's cool.
I can't wait to see the photos of that press in action. And that's something that is going to be so lasting. And, you know, what I'm really hoping, Nick, is that this is something that can resonate at future conferences. It would be so cool with every conference we could leave a press. I mean, what would that do for, you know, the whole campaign of like our membership, of letting people know about printmaking, about just getting it more out there?
Yeah.
You know, these are giant machines and they're hard to repair and hard to obtain. And if we can just make that accessibility, then we just really democratize the process even more.
Yeah. You just gave me chills even just bringing up that idea. That's like a great idea. And then we're always contributing and leaving behind, not just like cool experiences that are all ephemeral, but yeah, we leave something that like lasts for decades and generations to come, you know?
Yeah. See, that's one thing that, in doing this, ad hoc committee, for the conference, with Hannah and Blake Sanders, is we began writing this kind of a whole change to the way the conference would occur, as opposed to the conference just being something that, you know, people go to, hear this lecture, go to the fancy school, show their artwork, and then go home, that what if we made it more participatory, that if you went with your school, then we would find you a local high school or an elementary to go give a printmaking workshop for two of the days or one of the days of presentation to show the work somewhere out of context of where we're just showing it within the conference, and just be a little bit more broader with our educational outreach and creating these like high impact learning environments. You know, think that is like, that's the way that in academia, that's the way you get more funding. If you want to take students to go, they got to go and they got to do something. And there's such a limited table space for doing something when it comes to the conference. And, you know, Hannah and Blake and I, we came up with that. And we also came up with like, hey, if someone's going to the conference, what if we go like, you know, swing a hammer together for like the day before the conference? What if we had we have this large student volunteer army. What if we go early and all donate a day and a half to Habitat for Humanity someplace? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the schools would again fund their students for being a part of that as representatives of their institutions. And it would also just be another thing that could just resonate with what we could do at the conference. Those little things are what we had planned for Puerto Rico. And it seems like those little things are kind of, they're resonating. There are things that we're hoping to write about. We're not letting go. And that's one of the positive things about what's happening with Puerto Rico is Puerto Rico's been postponed. It has not been canceled.
Yeah.
And within the postponement, you know, there are obligations that the conference has with the other location in Providence, because all those things have been, the deposits paid, they've already been booked, there's contracts. Like the next conference, it has to be there.
Yeah.
But following that one, or the year after, depending on how deep these contracts are, I think that it's important that the membership also just holds the upcoming or new council for SGCI to make sure that this doesn't get too far back. I don't want to push it too far away so it doesn't happen in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years. So sure, I'm going to be a strong advocate for this.
Oh, me too, man. I'll be honest, I don't go to like all the conferences, and I haven't been in academia, so funding for me has always been really hard to put together to go. And this year I've been saving for months and planning since like, you know, early fall. Like, and so I've been like getting ready. I'm super psyched. I've been promoting about it and like making a bunch of stuff. And then, to have it all fall apart has like really kind of thrown me, and I'm sure tons of people are in the same boat where they had all these designs on things they were going to do. They were psyched about the events. And I absolutely think we have to go down there. And
I think that there were so many beautiful exhibitions that were put together to introduce a lot of us on the stateside to these amazing artists in the Caribbean.
Totally.
Like there are, you know, there's a rich, beautiful history there of printmaking in Puerto Rico. And we were about to see this. I saw all of it when I went on my first scouting trip there, and I was just blown away. And I'm like, oh man, not only is this rich history is cool, but I can't wait till everybody in our conference, to our students, get to come over and see what their students were doing, because their students were so badass. And I'm like, man, there's going to be grad schools coming here that are going to be like, yes, apply to my school, apply to my school. And now that did not happen, and it just breaks my heart. So this you know, the other exhibitions, like when the planning on our side, like the, you know, the kite project by Koichi, making all those giant printed Tyvek kites that were all going to be flown. That was going to be amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's like so many demonstrations and everything that was going to be given that it was really, you know, heartbreaking. But like I said, we're not going to let it, we're not going to let that go. That's one of the things that they are doing, is they're asking people not to, I guess, release the exhibitions virtually, so that way they retain some kind of freshness or newness whenever the conference does open up. So
okay, yeah.
At first I wanted to see some of these portfolios and, hey, what happened? And then I was like, oh, okay, I can wait. It'll be like a bottle of wine. It'll just get better.
Yeah, it might be interesting to unpack all that if you had to do it in like 3 years from now. Some of it'll have like an interesting like patina, you know, in the content or different things.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, yeah. So you're in Florida, right? So what's going on in Florida? Like, all I have heard about is like the beaches and things like that, and like spring break going on, and you know, I'm gonna get the coronavirus, y'all. I don't, you know.
Yeah, well, it's been. This is a unique place because this there's like, you know, the largest senior population in America, like, you know, is all down here.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the panic that's ensuing with them, or understanding, is like, you know, all the shelves just really cleared off really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And the young people that were at the beach and not getting off the beach and just being wild, I guess to say that those were not Floridians, because first off, the water's too cold for Floridians right now, and they don't go to the beach on spring break. So these were all kids from the Midwest,
yeah,
that had this trip planned, that, you know, went ahead. And so now that they've restricted everything, it's a lot more representative of what you see around the rest of the country, with people staying isolated. And mm-hmm. you go to the grocery store, there's masks, everyone's wearing masks, which I think is good. They finally started putting up this plexiglass separating the cashier at the grocery stores to the general public. I think everybody that works with that kind of close contact should be getting some type of hazardous duty paid by the government, because you don't get any more essential than my Publix checkout person right now.
Oh, yeah. Know. No, and every time I go to, like, a store now, it's like, I actually, like, make a point to, like, ask the people who are checking out, like, you know, how are you doing? Like, what's going on for you? Like, this must be
right.
crazy. And some of them, you know, the girl the other day at this place in here in L.A., she was just like, you know, she's like, and I saw her pause and kind of check with herself, and she's like, you know, no one ever asked me that. And she was like, I'm doing all right. And, you know, and it was, I'm just trying to, like, recognize them and, like, thank them, because
yeah.
I'm not on that front line. Like, I don't have a way I can function other than doing, like, this type of project or something. But I,
right.
Yeah, I appreciate so much that they're showing up and doing all that stuff and keeping the foundational society going for us, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, let me get back. I'm kind of all over the place, but you made these these skateboard presses. Like, where did that come from? And, like, how did you come up with such a thing?
It actually comes off of an idea that I first got from, we did these collaborative shows with this crazy sculptor from Northern Illinois. He was actually from Corpus Christi, but he was in grad school at NIU, named Eric Fuertes. And now I think he works at the, in Chicago at the Art Institute perhaps. And anyway, this dude just like totally got into what we were doing with drive-by press and driving around the country with the press in the back of the car. And he liked the idea when I talked to him about, you know, changing the whole context of where a press is seen. It's something different when you see a press in an art school, like, all right, that's where that kind of thing happens. But when you're in have a press and you're at a Walmart parking lot and you have a tent set up and people think you're selling corn or something. And he laughed at that idea and he liked it. And he was like, well, what if I start making different things out of a press? And we had this project that we did in Philly at the Print Center. And he helped me sculpt a 50-foot print on canvas called the Tower of Babel. And, you know, we put this up during one of the SGCs, and we had a press that he had there that we made in the meantime to kind of entertain the people while we were waiting for this thing to go up, called the Dumbo Press. And it was like a children's, like, grocery store where you put the quarters in and the thing rocks, little Dumbo thing. And yeah, he just put like a curved metal slab on it, and he was using like this little baby forklift to lift the heavy damn thing up and put it on box, and it printed awesome. It printed great. And then after that, he made a UFO press out of a skateboard, but with a round, giant round dish. And it didn't work that well. And so and that's where kind of like the press kind of fun with him stopped. But then I kept on looking at the skateboard, and Greg and I actually did a project, and we carved for a skateboard company on the actual decks themselves.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
And you can actually carve on a deck, and you can actually print with it if you use a rubber blanket. So if you have like a thick rubber blanket, you can put a skateboard right through your print. If it's a crappy skateboard, it's going to break, and it's going to be awesome. Video it, performance art. But if it is a good one, it's going to flex and then it's going to take back the shape when it goes through. And I don't know if I think, and I'm almost embarrassed to say, Greg and I were doing that at like a Warp Tour event or something.
Yeah.
And we were screen print. I mean, we were block printing skateboards at the Warp Tour. Oh, man.
That's all right. That's anyway. A great idea.
So that's where the idea, like, you know, started coming from. And so I had all these decks and, you know, and I saw Fuerte's original design and I'm like, wait a minute, if I just put like a skeleton in it, like a saguaro cactus, and then I can just put a piece of masonite and then fill it with that, what's called like that flex foam. And it works, man. It works so well. It's ridiculous how well it works. Yeah, I've had a few people buy them, and what I've been doing with the ones is, I buy them, they buy them, and then I make a couple extra and I'll send them to Puerto Rico. So right now I've already sent like six to Puerto Rico.
Wow. Yeah. And I saw
and
you
they use them.
Oh, go ahead. Well, yeah. What are they doing with them down there?
They're using them for different like youth workshops where they can't take a press, or if they're going somewhere at like a community or just a school. All of a sudden it just gives them ability to print and make prints, and through t-shirts, because the kids just love t-shirts. There's one thing with you hand a kid a piece of art and they're like, all right, what am I going to do with this? You know, like, yeah, put it in your wall in your home. Okay. But you make them a shirt and they're like, I'm going to wear this next week. And for the whole week, you're going to see me. I'm going to be wearing this, you know?
Totally.
So it's cute when they get to use it like that.
Yeah. I saw you, I think, wasn't it you that you posted a video of you made like a brayer out of like a paint roller and like a swimming noodle?
Yeah,
is that another one? Like, that was a great idea too.
Yeah, I've been around some like crazy punk rock printmakers that there was one who I learned a lot from by the name of Charles Hancock, and he's one of the artists that I met very young who I saw who made art, not excuses. And you know, I remember for a while he was working as a janitor, and he would always get all these little erasers that the kids would drop, and he began making carvings out of them and different relief blocks and then inking them up and using them as stamps. And I was like, oh, that's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And I seen that dude using a paint roller and rolling up bubble wrap and using bubble wrap as a dot pattern.
Oh yeah. Yeah, sure.
As a calligraph, and it works, man. And I, you know, I just saw like so many things like that. And where in art school, you're taught, and you know, that, hey, oil and acrylic don't mix. You know, believe me, don't try it. Man, mix all that stuff up. You know what I mean? Like, do what you want. There's no rules anymore. Like, learn the rules, okay, then break them. And I got to do a few workshops at these different youth organizations that weren't well-funded in New Mexico and in North Dakota, and it would be for different indigenous schools that were around there as well, and low income and high risk youth would come to the workshops, and the printmakers there were using Pepsi cans that they would cut open on both ends, then flatten it out, run it through the press, and having the kids make dry points on them, and they looked so amazing. And I saw this other printmaker that was using the swimming pool noodles, and he was getting the big ones and cutting them and then using them on the giant paint roller. And I'm like, oh man, that is genius. And seeing different artists use different materials outside of their intended purpose, that always captivated me with the alchemy of printmaking, you know, the problem solving, like, you know. And I just always appreciated that. And to be able to share that now at a time when, you know, people are looking for fun. Maybe that's an assignment for students. Build a press. You know, find a way to continue your practice when school does end. How are you going to maintain, you know, what you do? Is it possible? You know, maybe.
I mean, yeah, a lot more is possible than I think we would guess would be. But well, here, I don't want to keep you. I don't want to keep you too long. But do you have anything else you'd want to add, or like, you know, quick resources or anything else you'd like to share, or something else you'd like to tell people about before we go?
I would just say make sure you stick to what's happening on SGCI on the pages there. There's going to be some, a lot of the stuff is being linked, whether it be people's ideas on how to print from home, curriculum, what's coming up, these virtual exhibitions with all these BFA printmakers that don't get a chance to show their work, the MFAers, all this. There's going to be some virtual galleries and stuff that are going to be coming through on SGCI. And I think it'd be important for us printmakers to, you know, just like we can focus on one consolidated source that isn't, you know, just make it a little bit more easier for us to keep in touch. And I think that campaigns and efforts like this, what you're doing and what others are doing of just being out and about is important to keep us connected. That's one thing is that we come from such a tight community and a close family that things like this, just reach out to people and say, hey, how you doing? Thinking of you. They're mm-hmm. good things.
Very good things. Well, thank you, Joseph, for making time today. And I'll have you back on at some point here and we'll do like an actual interview too. So we'll talk again, I'm sure. So.
All right, man. I'm looking forward to it, man.
All right,
take
man.
Take care of yourself. Wash
you
your
too.
Hands.
Yeah, wash your hands. Stay safe. Social distance. And and just keep it up, dude. It sounds like you're doing a lot of cool stuff.
All right, man. Take care. Bye-bye.
Part two of today's show features Sarah Kirk-Hanley, Executive Director of the Manhattan Graphics Center, a community print shop located in the de facto Printers Row of New York City. New York is currently one of the hotspots of the outbreak currently in the U.S., and Sarah and I discuss her new role at the studio, which she took on in October, and how she is pivoting from directing day-to-day activities in the facility to her new job overseeing the business and community remotely. She's especially engaged with helping her artists keep engaged with their creative practice. We talk about that and other types of funding and nonprofit resources, so she shares a lot of useful insight into the state of grants and funding assistance, so this may be of help to any art administrators who are listening today. Let's check in with Sarah Kirk-Hanley and see what she's doing to foster community now that they can't be in a physical space. I'm on here with Sarah Kirk-Hanley from the Manhattan Graphics Center. And am I right, Sarah, you started there just in October. You became the director of that, right?
Yes. I've only been there about six months, I guess that would be.
Yeah. Congratulations on the new gig. It must be, must be cool being there.
Yeah. It's a really great community of printmakers, but you know, we serve the public, at large as well with a lot of educational and public programs.
Yeah.
Primarily we are a open community based, printmaking studio.
So that's like artist members come and use the facilities and you have group shows and things like that.
Yeah, we do, juried shows as well. Our membership fee is more of an administrative fee. It's quite, affordable. It's $50 a year, and then it's sort of pay per use after that. And we do a lot of classes, which come with free open workshop hours as well. And or you can just come to work there and pay for open workshop time, which is also quite affordable. It's all underwritten by grants and foundations, so that we keep the price very low. It's $6 an hour.
Wow.
To use the studio.
That's crazy. That's amazing.
It is really quite shocking sometimes to think about that. I mean, I've told people the prices and they say, those are 1980s prices.
Yeah, totally.
I think, well, that's actually when the Manhattan Graphics Center was founded, and they've worked very hard to keep the prices affordable.
Wow.
It's one of their primary missions.
Well, kudos to everyone for keeping that model alive. That's like a rare thing, especially in New York where you guys are located. Like, you're located in like lower Manhattan, right?
Actually, we used to be. We're now located in Midtown near the New York Times building and Port Authority. Yeah. We're kind of on that row, printer's row, I sometimes call it colloquially, but where the Blackburn workshop is and the Lower East Side print shop as well. So.
Oh, great. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right along 8th Avenue in the 30s, upper 30s.
Yeah, I went and toured. I maybe toured the old location. This is like a long time ago now that I think about it. But I remember coming through and just being kind of amazed, like the really great facilities, lots of equipment, lots of people, like tons of people actually actively working, which like sometimes you go to shops and it's just like they have all the facilities, but not a huge audience. So it seems like you have a robust community. But I gather probably things are probably shut down right now, right? Like no one's working in there, or what's your policy currently?
Yep, we shut down early. I and the presidents of the board called it on the early side before it was law, but we closed on March 13th. So we've been closed 2.5 weeks now.
And you were saying you have you've kind of pivoted to do some new programs and things, or what are you doing to keep busy like throughout the shutdown?
Yeah, well, we have a lot of housekeeping to do regarding just dealing with the situation as it is. You know, we have a core of instructors who we consider to be almost like family, you know, staff, and we've been trying to keep them afloat, deciding how to support them in this time because it has impacted so many artists, you know, their bottom line. And, you know, we've done what we can to keep paying them if that's applicable, if we can, and refunding classes that were canceled and all that. But looking forward, it is becoming difficult to predict how long this will last. And that's one of my jobs, you know, to kind of have a sense of when we might be able to reopen on it, maybe on a limited basis at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, thinking about all of those things moving forward, but also we've heard from our community and audience that they just really miss, you know, that isolation problem. They miss having that community environment to see friends and talk about their work and share ideas. So luckily, my position and also our other full-time staff person's positions are underwritten by grants and donations. So we're still around to troubleshoot and think ahead. So that I'm speaking of my director of operations, which is Erica Chris, and she and I have been thinking about how we can still serve our community of artists in this time and posting resources for them, grants, you know, for artists and loans for artists in this difficult time when they aren't eligible for unemployment and all that sort of thing. But also filling the void of being closed. So we're talking about starting an online group, you know, to share ideas and have Zoom meetings and be able to connect in some way. So that's taking shape right now. We don't have a solid, we're exploring different options for how that might look. But we do think we'll probably have to be closed for an extended period. So we want to provide some stopgap programming.
I'm sure this will affect like your funding and stuff too. Like, what does that look like from your end where you apply for a lot of grants? Do you foresee grant funding drying up periodically because of something like this? Or what do you, I mean, I know we don't have any context to, we haven't had this happen before, but.
Yeah, well, the funding community, the private foundations have been quick to respond and be extremely supportive of their nonprofits. So
that's good.
We heard early on from the Matisse Foundation, which supports us, the Pierre and Tana Matisse Foundation, that we were released of any obligations to fulfill our educational programming, you know, grant obligations. And so to use the money as we saw fit to get through this difficult period. And they recognized that we wouldn't have the ability to fulfill some of those educational programs.
Wow,
one of
really
ours
generous.
Is the Visiting Printmakers Workshop, where we have printmakers and go into the high schools of New York City and teach the kids a little bit about printmaking on site. We bring a tabletop etching press in to the school and show them a little bit, you know, get the idea of how printmaking works. And then we take them on a field trip to the International Print Center, New York. And then we talk about the art on the walls. So obviously we can't do that right now. New York City schools are closed, you know, so it's not as much of an issue right now in terms of grant monies, you know, but it could be if this goes on for a while. So yeah, we have other foundations that have reached out to us and been very, you know, supportive in terms of, you know, letting us move forward in the way that we need to at the moment. And I also just applied for a smaller grant to do some alternative programming through the New York, Community Trust. They're, offering to arts institutions, support for not only personnel, but also alternative programming.
Hmm. Is that for like this time period of all the shutdown and everything, like specifically, or?
Yes, it's an emergency response. Came out last week, I think. It's available to New York City only organizations, nonprofits. So their primary directive is to give it to first responders, but they also note in the grant wording, the prospectus, that that New York is known for its arts and that is a vital aspect of the city, and they want to make sure that arts organizations can stay afloat as well during this period. So we'll see how that goes, but I asked for a little funding to do programming, maybe on the web or, you know, something, having a specific dedicated website or that type of thing.
That's a good idea. And I think that's a good tip for just anybody out there to like look at their local and like state art organizations and see if there's like new funding opportunities or ways they might be reappropriating grant funding that they would use otherwise to specifically deploy it for this time.
Yes, I've seen a lot of that. The New York Foundation for the Arts has quite a number of grants posted there that have welled up in response to COVID-19. They have ones that are specifically directed at certain populations, you know, artists. Anonymous Was a Woman is funding mid-career female artists who have lost, you know, income in response to this disaster. And this isn't a new one, but the Rauschenberg Foundation has a grant for artists who have medical bills specifically that they can't cover. So yeah, if you go to those websites, New York Foundation for the Arts and the Americans for the Arts, there are a number of art specific grants and loan, government loan opportunities and so on there. And some are specific to certain regions. I saw one for Seattle, the Seattle area. So yeah, if you go online to your local government or arts organizations, you should advocacy organizations, you should find anything local to your area. New York has a number of them as well, besides the one that I just mentioned.
Yeah, those are great ideas. Well, so we're kind of hitting time. It's going so quickly. But like, what did you want to share anything else in particular, or give any other advice to like similar kind of arts administrators out there who are trying to adapt and cope with all this?
Well, I've seen some who have jumped right to the fore. You know, who have great resources. We have pretty modest resources at the Manhattan Graphic Center, but for instance, the IPCNY is doing all kinds of web-based programming already. They have a staff of five or six, I think, full-time employees. So check out their website. They have an online tour of their current exhibition. They're doing a weekly crossword, like a print trivia crossword, which is fun.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And then Tamarind is also, Tamarind Institute has done quite a lot as well online already. And then Tom Huck in Kansas City, St. Louis, he's doing a online woodcutting class through his Evil Prince website. So,
oh, no way.
You know, there are it's a great way to keep occupied, I think, in this time, you know, to stay busy and still keep learning. So there are a lot of resources out there that are popping up. But, you know, we're kind of going at learning as we go and in our organization. So my ideas are still taking form, but I am thinking in terms of even doing something alternative for New York Print Week. I've heard some rumblings that might have to be altered in some way. So this is really starting to look like a long haul at this point. And, you know, there's a lot to think about in terms of how we move forward. But with other arts organizations, one other resource I've found useful for tips on how to move forward and remain engaged with your communities and audiences is the Qzeum. It's a online webinar service for nonprofits, and it is focused on museums, but they keep in mind the smaller nonprofit organizations as well. So they've had a couple of webinars that I've found useful in terms of thinking about how to connect and stay online and keep your programming going in this difficult time.
That's a great idea. Yeah, I'll try to link to some of these so people can find them as they hear you mention them in the mm-hmm. show notes. But well, thank you. And other than that, are you guys all healthy on your end? Like your family and like close community? Is everybody doing okay?
Yeah, luckily, I have yet to hear of anyone in our membership or, you know, audience or instructor base who's fallen ill. And I hope it remains that way. I do know they're all following the directives of the government and the city and staying home, so... Mm-hmm. It's hard, but at least everyone is well. So,
well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
We know we'll be staying at home at least through April 15th at this point. So,
yeah, I'm expecting it to go longer. I don't know when they'll make that call. I guess every couple of weeks they reassess it, right? But
yeah, I think it will go longer as well. Sometime in the next couple of days, we'll decide whether to move forward with our summer term programming. But it doesn't look good at this point. So well, I know a lot of things have already been canceled for the summer. So,
well, hopefully we come through this like sooner than later and you guys can get back to doing what you do. Even in some altered capacity, it'd be nice to have people printing again and getting back to life. So,
yeah, everyone misses the presses.
Yes. Well, it's the thing you need that's you can't always own your own. So you have places like Manhattan Graphics Center for that.
But, right, exactly.
But we'll get back to it soon. Well, thank you for coming on and just sharing a little bit. There's a bunch of good resources there you mentioned, so I'll make sure to share that with people.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Nick.
Definitely. All right, well, I will talk to you soon, and definitely stay safe and take care.
Thanks, you too.
That's it for today's Press On, but look for the third edition coming out soon. A quick thank you goes out to my newest patron, my wonderful guest, Sarah Kirk-Hanley. I'm so appreciative for the support as I continue to do the work of making the show. You too can help support the show on Patreon by going to patreon.com/theprintcast and join the crew for as little as $3 a month. As always, I will keep my eyes peeled for new and interesting perspectives to share, but if you have something you'd like to convey to our community, don't hesitate to reach out to me with a DM on Instagram @theprintcast or via email using info@theprintcast.com. I'm looking for you content creators out there to share about your new videos, for companies to share about their initiatives to engage patrons in new ways, or even you artists who've started doing studio visits online or artist lectures using Zoom. You're invited to come on the pod and tell us all about it. There's a lot of rad content coming out right now, day by day, and it's only going to get more diverse and interesting. Thanks everyone for checking out this edition of Press On. As the situation evolves, there will be more to come. You've been listening to a special edition of the Printcast called Press On. Press On is a limited series that looks at the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on the printmaking community. Episodes of Press On are bonus content for the Printcast podcast and are hosted by Nick Naughton. You can look for more from this series in the coming weeks, so make sure you subscribe to the Printcast. If you like what you're listening to, help us get the word out by leaving a 5-star review on iTunes and sharing with your friends on social media. You can find the Printcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, as well as online at theprintcast.com. Music for this special edition is by Blue Dot Sessions and Jazar. Take care of yourselves and each other, and we'll see you on another episode of The Printcast. Bye for now.